It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
What's up, party people? It is Gil Alexander live from the Bay right here on a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, Sirius XM Channel 204, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, FUBO, Sling Game Plus, however you're taking us in. I appreciate it. We all appreciate it this morning. Another pandemic special. And by that, I mean a cavalcade of sports and a cavalcade of betting action for you. Still to come on the show, Paul Carr to talk Bundesliga with us. We'll play that game that we love to play with him, which is it anything? Talking about these home teams not being able to win a game yet. Not completely true. Three times it's happened. By the way, home in quotes. Todd Wright will be here. Reactions to the match, too, and what he thinks about the NHL's new plan. And Chris Felica, the Bear from ESPN's College Game Day, who has given us a horse winner in a race the last four times he's been on the show. At least one winner the last four times. He'll try to make it five in a row later on the show today. And we will go over. I've sort of resisted for the last 2 months, by and large, going over every little flirtation all these leagues have with coming back. But this week in earnest, there's reason to talk about it. So we'll get into the NHL's latest plan, the NBA, the differing plans in the NBA. Mark Cuban has something to say about that. And then the disaster that is Major League Baseball. God help us. It's a strike. Let's call it what it is. But let's begin with NASCAR, because we got a race tonight. The Charlotte Motor Speedway. Let's bring in our NASCAR expert, the great Jeff Colleandro. Good morning to you, Jeffrey.
Good morning, Gil. Thank you. Awesome to be on.
Let us start with NASCAR's longest race from this past Sunday, the Coca-Cola 600. And Brad Keselowski ends up winning that. But there was a couple things that sort of need to be rehashed. And again, under the, you know, with the sort of context that most sports fans and sports bettors are actually not as familiar with NASCAR as they are with all the other sports. I think you're aware of this. No breaking news there. What was the deal? Let's start first with Chase Elliott. So Chase Elliott's two laps away from claiming his first victory at the Coca-Cola 600. Instead, it sort of ends in, I don't know if devastation is exaggerating it, but late lap caution, and he's called to the pit. What is that all about? Explain.
Well, you know, they were all on similar tire schedules, which means they had all come in the most recently about the same time. All their tires were pretty much equalized. He had the lead. Clean air is a huge, huge advantage. And they decided to call him into the pits. And when they did that, out of the top 10, maybe three or four others came in, including Martin Truex. And the drivers that stayed out, Brad Keselowski being the main one, just had to get a good restart, and they weren't going to catch him. It was, in my opinion, I was absolutely stunned that they would bring him in. The same can be said for Martin Truex. You know, he was in the top four. They were going to have very good finishes. Elliott lost the race. He ended up working his way back up to third in two laps, which is great, but he was in the lead. And he gave it up, and not him per se, but the crew chief, and just a mistake. And you could feel it happening. It was palpable across the NASCAR community. It's like, what are you doing giving up this lead when you've been on the threshold of victory now for the last couple of races?
Yeah, you see, you faked me out there. I thought by your initial tone to answering that question, you were going to say, oh, well, you know, just that's how it goes. It could have gone either way with the decision. But what you're saying is, no, you were in the moment. You're like, what are they doing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Truex as well.
Yeah, Truex had no business coming in. Came in fourth, ended up coming out. He had a bad pit stop, had to start up on the high line, got hung up behind some slower cars. And suffered for it. He was right in the thick of things. He was ahead of Kevin Harvick. Harvick was on the inside going into the restart and made the pass. And that was the end of that matchup after he was beating him the entire race.
And then Jimmy Johnson, again, just, you know, trying to sort of flesh this out for people. Jimmy Johnson, he fails the post-race technical inspection, and so was therefore disqualified. Went from second, where he was, all the way to, I want to say, 53rd. results updated to reflect that. Some sports books handled it differently than others because they were too quick to pull the trigger on grading. How common is that?
Well, I think globally it can be inconsistent. I think if you have an actual physical ticket in your hand and you're waiting at the sports book, like at the Westgate, I think they're going to wait for official results. You don't always see that, especially globally.
Okay. And then today, so tonight is the Ausco Uniforms 500. And this is, let's before we even get into the notion of any details, the one thing that I think you want to stress, and you'll tell me if I'm correct here, is with all, and we've said this the last couple times, so you're not getting the same type of rhythm, the same type of tenor into a race. There's not the same schedule of events. And your handicapping relies very much on being able to gather as much information as you can all the way up to the point of the race. Is this making it extremely difficult for you? Are you backing off? I mean, let's be authentic about this. Are you not betting as much on these as you normally would?
Yeah, absolutely, Gil. You know, the loss of practice and happy hour has cut the ability to handicap effectively, in my opinion, by about 70%. So I have absolutely backed off. I've said that in the podcast over and over again. This is not a time. NASCAR is absolutely one of the very best sports that you can bet on. I've bet on all of them. NASCAR has the best in terms of profit margin, the ability to look forward, see what's going to happen, and make a good profit. It's been that way for years. That being said, I can't remember information being this tight. You'd have to go pre-internet days. And, you know, we're seeing the loss of practice, the loss of happy hour. We saw Denny Hamlin before the race even started at Charlotte. He lost some tungsten or ballast outside of the car. That's a four-race suspension for his car chief, his crew chief, his lead engineer. Those things should never happen. And when you're talking, I can't ever remember that ever occurring when there was a bet on the line. And by not having practice, not having any happy hour, you're getting these sort of technical fall-offs, you know, in terms of prepping the car. Again, they're also using a new tire compound. We have no practice, no happy hour to judge that tire compound. And I think that played a large role in why passing was so difficult the other night at Charlotte. And then to cap it off, we're looking at 60 to 70% chance of rain this evening in Charlotte. Those are not good handicapping baselines to start from.
Yeah, well, that's good. Not to be the old Debbie Downer about it, but that's a pretty honest assessment of it. Let me ask you this. First of all, what's the name of your podcast, Jeff? Let's get that out there for everybody.
The NASCAR Betting Podcast, and it comes out. We're doing it once a week. Generally, comes out Saturday morning to prep you for the Sunday race.
So now, as someone who has done a podcast for a decade now, almost a decade. I'm curious, based on everything you just said and the sort of very sober but deliberate explanation you just gave about how your bets are getting pared back, what has the reaction been from people who listen to your podcast and from people who follow you on Twitter at NASCAR Visionary? Are there those who find this just as annoying as could possibly be? What's been your surprise with that?
Well, I think when you really break it down and look at it and look at the change pre-pandemic versus where we are right now, I think everybody wants to get back to some sort of normalcy, including the NASCAR schedule. And they're doing things for the exact right reasons. There's no issue there. But some people really just want to bet. And we're in this for the long term. That's never changed. We are focused on turning a profit. That's what this is all about. That's what it's been about for as long as I've been doing this. And, you know, some people take the caution a little more seriously than others. Others just want to have some entertainment, and that's fine. There's no issue with that. But I don't think you can expect the accuracy of the information to be drilled down as well as you might like when we just don't have the information to go off of.
Yeah. No, it's super honest. So now, with that said, do we even dive into the Alsko uniforms 500 at all? Because the fear here, again, and you know how this goes, Jeff, as soon as you start to even say, well, here's what I might be looking for, right? People will sort of, he said it, bang, and they go right into it. So listen, just to appease that little part of the audience, let us stress one more time. We can only stress it so many times. Take these in the context that we just outlined. But what might you be able to say as something you might be looking for as this race approaches tonight?
Well, to me, it looks like it's a race to halfway if they can get it in. And that would be lap 104. They would have to complete that lap in order for the race to be official. Hopefully they can get that in at least tonight. I think if you're looking at the futures market, Joey Logano at 12-1, I think carries a little bit of weight. You know, solid Penske car. He's looked good. He's had his issues, but just based on his starting spot and his odds there, you know, that could be a play. If you want a super long shot, just to play around with, Austin Dillon at 65-1. I mean, that's a pizza money sort of bet, as I hear Paulie Howard say. But, you know, there is definitely, he's ran very well the last few races, and he's won at Charlotte before. So I don't think that's necessarily a horrible play. When you want to look at matchups, I think the interesting one is Kyle Busch as plus money, plus $1.25 versus Chase Elliott. Kyle Busch has had the best ROI the last 3 years in NASCAR in terms of head-to-head wagers. And being able to find him as an underdog is a pretty rare thing. They had an interesting truck race last night, but sort of came down between him and Chase Elliott. Elliott wound up winning. And I think we're going to see Kyle Busch fire back a little bit. That said, I did hear him on a Zoom call last night say that he did not know how good his car would be tonight. I've heard Kyle Busch say that a dozen times, and he winds up winning the race. Yeah. So I yeah. I don't what really – and I think being upset off of the truck race can kind of guide how he feels about the world going forward. So I sort of take that with a grain of salt. And the only other matchup I would look at would be Austin Dillon as minus 120 over Clint Bowyer at even money. We see Bowyer have an affection to the outside wall, and those two generally meet up. And when you're talking about race matchups – you want a driver who can finish consistently, and Clint Bowyer really hasn't been able to do that.
Jeff Coley, Andrew, Alsko Uniforms 500 tonight, and there we go. Once again, after giving that whole preamble about why this isn't as, you know, perhaps accurate as in the past, I went ahead and I wrote them down myself, Jeff. See, I'm just as guilty as anybody else. Busch plus money versus Elliott, Kyle Busch, that is, Dillon minus 120. Over Clint Bowyer. You and I didn't talk about this that we're going to talk about, but I'm just going to on a flyer here in our last couple minutes, because I know you're a huge, for those who don't know, Jeff is a huge, not only college football fan, but he is steeped there at Stanford for a generation or two anyway, a huge Stanford fan, and has tie-ins to the campus as well that we've spoken about before with your dad. So I want to just ask you this, because I've been here at the Bay during this strange time in our lives, and so I've had a chance to really try to soak in the Pac-12 perspective on the return to college football. And I know that Larry Scott is saying all the political things that he's supposed to say at this point, but it does occur to me, and I'm curious your reaction to this, that the other majors – you know, the ACC might be a little different. Maybe basketball is a little more important. Clemson is huge. So Clemson sort of makes that go away also. All the other major conferences, from the SEC down, football really controls the school decision-making on this. But I just get the sense that in the end, the Pac-12 is different. Yes, they like money as much as anybody else does. So I'm not going to sit here and say they won't cave as well. But I do get the impression that if there's any of these major conferences that might end up doing this differently, and by differently, I mean, I don't know if they're going to go along with every other conference in college football. It strikes me that it might be the Pac-12 where the schools actually override athletics. Is that a fair assessment from your vantage point?
I think so. You know, I think you look at some of the places where the town basically shuts down, whether it's Nebraska or, like you said, Clemson or Georgia. you know, those towns basically come to a screeching halt on Saturday afternoon. We don't see that as much in the Pac-12, maybe up near Washington, but not so much in the Bay Area. And I've been going to Stanford games 40 years. But I think at the end, there's a lot of concern about the safety of not just the players, but the fans, the coaches, and everybody who's involved. And I get the feeling, especially with the medical community behind these schools, which they are so entrenched in, I think they're going to be a little slower to be accepting of a wide open scale like we knew before.
Yeah, it's kind of the sense I get. Jeff Coleander. Jeff, appreciate it as always. We will watch tonight. I'm sure we will be betting on it in some form.
Thank you, Gil. Best of luck.
Thank you. Jeff Coleandro, at NASCAR Visionary on Twitter. And from college football, we got to put college football on the back burner because obviously NHL, NBA, and MLB, more really on the fore here in terms of the plans that they have put forth to come back and play their respective sports. We'll go through them throughout the show, but we'll do the NHL first because they had what was supposed to be a big cataclysmic announcement. I don't know if cataclysmic is the right word, but a major announcement yesterday ended up really being a corroboration of some of the stuff we talked about last week. But we'll get Danny Burke in studio. We'll walk through all of them. And, of course, Todd Wright, Chris Felica, Paul Carr. Nothing but picks, nothing but action on today's numbers game right here at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Father's Day, fast approaching. What does Dad really want for Father's Day? Steak, of course. For goodness sake. You didn't get the answer to that? For a limited time, you can find a variety of packages filled with beautiful Omaha steaks, plus other premium meats, side dishes, and desserts, all ideal for Dad's special day. These packages come flash frozen, vacuum sealed, and delivered in a cooler with dry ice safely to his door. All backed by Omaha Steaks, unconditional 100% money-back guarantee. Go to omahasteaks.com and enter the code VSIN into the search bar. Many packages include free shipping and a free one-pound package of their cured, thick applewood, smoked steak-cut bacon. My God, I'm hungry. Visit omahasteaks.com and enter code VSIN, that's V-S-I-N, in the search bar to shop for Father's Day today. It's Gil Alexander in San Francisco. Danny Burke in the studio there in Las Vegas. How you doing, Danny? What's happening?
I'm doing good, Gil. Excited. We got some positive news with the NHL, at least. And like you said before, not so positive with the MLB. Hopefully the NBA can get on the same track as the NHL. But, you know, at least we got something at this point. So I'm looking forward to it.
Dude, we'll get to baseball because baseball is just a disaster. But you're right. One sport had to be first, right? And it looks like Gary Bettman has no problem with it being the NHL. But now there's a lot of question marks still. And if you go through this, the very first one that I think is something that people are going to overlook, right, is that Bettman said the goal is to hold an 82-game season in 2020-2021. So I don't want to make people's heads explode, but like commissioners of these sports have to think about things like the calendar, second waves, you know, all kinds of stuff. So like the first thing is like, we're trying to get 82 games for 2020-21, but I can't make any promises. So that, let's just put that to the side because our heads are gonna seriously explode. But it should be noted here, players in the NHL have agreed on the format, but the NHLPA has not formally approved any actual return to finish the season. So it's not official yet. But the league and the NHLPA have to figure out so many things still. Health, safety protocols, they got other issues to solve. But here's what we do know. Bettman said the 2019-2020 regular season is effectively over. That differs from basketball, which we'll talk about coming up. But the regular season hockey is over, and it's this 24-team conference-based postseason format that we talked about last week, you and I, Danny. The only two teams that objected to this, it was 29-2 in favor of this. The only two teams that objected were the Carolina Hurricanes and the Tampa Bay Lightning. I would assume the Lightning's objection might have to do, maybe I'm wrong, with seeding here as part of the format in the round robin. I don't know if that's because Tampa Bay is a two seed, if I'm not correct. Is that right? Let's flash that up on the screen if we could. The Lightning would be a two seed in the East. So their objection, and I'm speculating here, might be because they're like, look, if we're the number two seed, we ought to be able to play whoever wins, you know, that that 6-11 bracket.
Right.
We don't want to reseed it. But basically the format is 24 teams, 12 at each conference. Teams 1 through 4 in terms of winning percentage will play a round robin to determine 1 through 4 seeding, 5 through 12 in brackets. And that's how it goes. You like, Danny?
I mean, look, as a fan and as a better, I'm pretty excited, especially too, being a Blackhawks fan. Let's be honest, this is the only chance they're going to get in the playoffs. So just selfishly, I'm a little excited because of that too. But I think it really will be a fascinating experience. Now, I could understand, Gil, to be honest, why some of these top tier teams would be a little bit frustrated, but at the same time, you have to realize what unprecedented time we're in right now. So if you're kind of salty as a fan, as a member of the team, whatever it may be, let's just be happy that something is in the works right now, and this is a possibility that it's going to happen, and you do have a chance to finish off the season. And we talked about this with other sports too, Gil. Look, naturally, they're all going to have some sort of an asterisk on it, but at the same time, everybody will understand why and what the reasoning was for it. So at the end of the day, I think we just got to be happy that something's in place, and if we can get this to come to fruition, yeah, I'm excited for it, especially with this huge tournament aspect of it. I think it's going to be a blast.
Gorgeous bracket, by the way. Gorgeous graphic that they're on the screen, Danny. Well done. They're trying to do this in hub cities. The hub cities, you know, two hub cities. The ones being considered are Chicago, Columbus, Dallas, Edmonton, Las Vegas, Los Angeles, Minneapolis, Pittsburgh, Toronto, and Vancouver. Problem with the two Canadian cities there at the end, the Canadian government's mandatory 14-day quarantine probably is going to force the NHL to pick two U.S. cities. But Vegas definitely sounds like an obvious choice. I mentioned last week, too, there's 17% of the players are out of the country right now. You'd have to get them back, so that's problematic. But they're trying to open training camp no earlier than July 1st, and then the season can start after that. Hockey, first in line. We'll talk basketball next. Lots of plans there. Coming back on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Back on A Numbers Game, Gil Alexander live in San Francisco. Danny Burke, by the way, in Las Vegas. Danny's the fresh-faced one among us. Danny, so by the way, the betting implications, I should mention, to that NHL stuff is going to be varied. As with everything, people need to check the rules of the house. And you're going to see, with season win totals, that's largely all going to be refunded. Right. But with, you know, division futures now, that's quite possibly refunds many places. I say quite possibly because there are going to be exceptions, right? Because we already have reports of FanDuel saying, hey, look, we'll actually grade the winners, but we'll refund all the others. And for those who are going to heap praise on something like that, easy now. They've done the math, I can promise you. And they've figured out that from a marketing perspective, that's way more effective for them and more profitable in the long run than for them not to do it. Hockey's not exactly, a massive decision for them. But not to be the skeptic, Danny. You know, I wouldn't want to be accused of being that guy. But what I'm saying is every book's going to do something different here. So don't take for granted what's going to happen with all your different hockey wagers. But there are the bullet points again on the screen at VSiN.com and the VSiN app. I think we pretty much covered the main parts there. So we'll see. None of this is official yet, but they're probably going to end up with two American hub cities. to try to do this 24-team format. At least that's how it looks right now. But hockey's being very deliberate. Late July would be, I think, the earliest start. Mid to late July would be the earliest this could possibly go down. Again, with the big sort of umbrella statement being Gary Bettman wants to try to get 2020-2021 done, 82 games in its entirety, but no regular season for this year, as opposed to the NBA, right, Danny? Mm-hmm. So this is so difficult for Adam Silver to be able to navigate through this. Because on the one hand, he's got this thing where it's like, okay, I want to, this is Adam Silver's head now. We're going to go in Adam Silver's head. I want to play more regular season games so we can get all those regional TV contracts triggered. So on the one hand, it's this money thing. On the other hand, it's this complete realization on his part, he's a smart man, that the fewer people you have around, you're maximizing your chances of getting through this. So, you know, there's proposals with all 30 teams. There's proposals of, you know, the standard 16 teams. And then there's kind of everything in between. And I don't know. There's no possible way, I guess what I'm saying, Danny, is that he could make a final decision on this without people being unhappy.
Yeah,
some people are going to be unhappy.
That's kind of just how it is with anything nowadays, Gil, but especially this too. And you're right. I mean, you and I are of the same notion, I believe, that where it's, look, just pretty much go straight to the playoffs. You think a team like the Atlanta Hawks, I know you use this example, is going to be gearing up and ready to go play five meaningless games or whatever it may be. Now, that could be our perspective, and I know in the article that Woj put out, I mean, one player remained anonymous, and he said, my thing is play 30 teams for as many games as possible for the money or go straight to the playoffs. And I'm of the notion that the latter would be the move there and to go straight to the playoffs. But you got to understand, like you pointed out, the NBA is a business. All those regional contracts getting to 72 games, I understand that proponent of it. But once again, like we talked about last segment and like we always point out, it's unprecedented times and you have to understand that some things are going to have to differ.
Yeah, they got to get to 72 games to trigger the local money on the TV contracts. The Hawks actually have played the most games. They played 67. And then some people, you're right, in this article, they talk about, hey, the Hawks might be one of these young teams that actually does want to get some reps in. But here's the thing, and no matter how you slice this, it comes up, potential pitfall. Mm-hmm. So there are enough players, and this is Woj talking here, there are enough players on enough bad teams who've shared the idea that they don't see the value in several weeks of camp and quarantines to play 5 to 8 regular season games with no playoff potential. Damian Lillard has already come out and said, if there's no real way for the Blazers to get into the playoffs, I'll show up for my team, but I'm not playing. Mm-hmm. I'm not participating. And Damian Lillard isn't alone, by the way, with that sentiment, I'm sure. Then there are some lottery teams that have also made it clear via back channels to the league, this is Woj again, that if their players are decidedly so-so on returning, there will be no showdown. In other words, all right, fine. If you need to keep us out, no problem. We'll see you next season. And then, you know, teams like the Warriors are participating. If you go to 30 teams, are you really going to get Steph Curry and Klay Thompson? Or are you going to get, you know, the poo-poo platter of players playing? We don't know. So there's a Thursday GM call tomorrow with the league, Friday's Board of Governors call. It's possible the league could bring a recommendation on Friday. It's quite possible that they don't. But they're being deliberate. And we said late July for the NBA. Now they're starting to creep it into August. Because they're really trying to get this right. Some agents hinting to GMs, clients who've had good seasons on the way into free agency, might not want to risk undoing that success in a return. These are all back channels. None of this has been stated publicly, right? Imagine if you're on a contender and you're like, yeah, I'd rather not play. I don't want to risk anything. That can't go over well. And then mediocre and bad teams, we'll have some players that are just ducking out. Because they're like, what's the point of this? So all of that in the mix. And here's the Mark Cuban plan, because Mark Cuban has stepped up and he has said, here's my plan. I think we take the top 20 teams by win percentage in the NBA up until this point, and we just seed them 1 through 20. And then we play the, you know, a group of games in the regular season. Enough of those games where teams that are outside of the top 20 still have a shot at getting into the top 20. So effectively, the only teams that would really not have anything to play for are the Timberwolves and the Warriors. Mm-hmm. But every other team would actually have a shot to get in the postseason. Then once the regular season ends, he would have the 17th seed and the 20th play each other, either one game, one off, or a best of three, and the 18th and 19th do the same. The winners of those two events, whether it's series or game, would then take on the teams that are 15 and 16 as a play-in to get into the actual playoff bracket. Then once you get to the 16, then you play it out from that point forward. That's Cuban's very thoughtful way of saying, look, I understand the money side. We play regular season, so we appease that. And I'm trying to make it as fair as possible for it, for as many teams as possible. By the way, his Mavericks would get the worst of it because they right now are like, I think, 8 games ahead of the Grizzlies. They're like 7th right now in the West. So not exactly helping his team. So I don't know. It makes as good a sense as any, I guess.
Yeah, it absolutely does. But it seems like it's one of those things, Gil, where as fans and just spectators, it seems like it would be incredible, but also yet too good to be true, right? It just seems like it would be too much fun and make too much sense almost for the NBA to do that. But let's hope they get something in the works soon.
Just trying to get a refund on my Warriors 14-1 ticket to win it all, Danny Burke. That would be a very pleasurable experience. Let's see if that happens. We'll see. Who knows? But that looks like August as well. We'll talk about the disaster that is baseball coming up. But Bundesliga next. We got picks from Paul Carr right here on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
VSiN's digital magazine Point Spread Weekly is the best tool to improve your handicapping for the upcoming NFL season. The weekly issues offer expert analysis from the likes of Matt Eumanns, Michael Lombardi, and the rest of VSiN's panel of experts. Sign up now, get all of VSiN's content free until a major sport returns. You hear us, hockey? Just go to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. We bring him in now. God, it seems like on a daily basis, at least it's consecutive days, to talk Bundesliga with us, because that's where we are, ladies and gentlemen. It's our buddy from True Media Networks, Paul Carr. How you doing, Paulie? Split yesterday, huh?
That's right. We got a split. You know, I mentioned that I wondered if it would be cagey, kind of a final type match. It ended up being that way. So maybe I should have trusted that little voice in the back of my head a little more. But that's okay. We'll take the split and we'll move on to today.
By the way, before we move on to today, you and I were texting. You quite enjoyed Spanky yesterday. I want to thank Spanky again. Had a great conversation with him yesterday. He was super generous with his time, and got great reaction.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting. He's saying, you know, how he doesn't know players, things like that, which on one hand, I kind of get, you know, I sometimes try to do that with more at the team level where, you know, okay, if I hide the team names, I think a lot of people do this. You hide the team names and you look at the stats, like what would this line look like or something? So there's some truth to that. The extreme of not knowing who Andrew Luck is, you know, maybe that's a little bit crazy. It's one thing to me to not know like who players are on IUPUI, I think you referenced, but to not know, you know, one of the, whatever, 5'10 most known quarterbacks in the league is a little bit different. So maybe that's a little extreme, but I thought it was an interesting way of approaching everything.
Yeah. It resonated with you because it's sort of an exaggerated way of what you do.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Try to hide the numbers, hide the names, or not the numbers, hide the names, whether it's team or player sometimes, and see, you know, what would the data suggest? And then, you know, you apply the eye test on top of that and see where you can go.
Yeah, you're right. IUPUI, a little more relatable than the Andrew Luck part. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It was spectacular. It was just so interesting to get his insights. And he, again, unique place in the ecosystem. That's for sure.
Seems like it.
All right, so it's time for you and I to play another game of Is It Something? Is this something?
Yeah.
The old Letterman bit with the Bundesliga. All right, what's the updated record on the quote-unquote home teams? And I guess the thing I really want to ask you is because most people are going to listen and be like, you see, when there's nobody in the stands, look how badly the home team is doing. All right, well, like that would explain why it would be, I don't know, the home field edge would dip a little bit. But like,
right.
Why are none of them winning? Like, that's not, you can't explain that, right? That's just some nonsense.
Not really. So let's throw a lot of numbers out here. So home teams, two losses, two draws yesterday. So in 2.5 match days since the restart, 3 wins, 7 draws, 12 losses for the home teams. And you look at the odds, what they projected, even as they're starting to shift away from home teams a little, they projected about 10 home wins. And so here's some good work. This is from Harvard's Lori Shaw, a guy I know from the sports analytics circuit, basically. Mm-hmm. So home teams won 17 points in the first 19 games played without fans. And he looked at, you know, basically random 19 game samples over the past 15 or so Bundesliga seasons, and 17 points from 19 games for the home teams happened less than 1% of the time. So this is an extreme outlier.
Yes. That's great.
Why? You know, we're not sure. And then he took it another step, because I think we've talked about is like, is this like the beginning of a season? So he also looked at the first 19 games of seasons in Europe's top five leagues over the last 17 seasons. So that's 85 seasons of data, the first 19 games of each season. Only once did home teams get 17 points or fewer. So that seems to throw out the everyone's just getting, you know, restarted sense. So this is clearly something I think we're safe in saying. What we don't know is, you know, how big a something is this? How long will this something last? That's what we don't know. And I don't know that there's any way to know it without a giant sample size. But it's something, you know, I think we just kind of lean into a little bit over the next couple weeks until, you know, unless it shifts drastically the other way.
That's a great way of putting it. Lean into. It's clearly something. It just might not be as something as we think it's as we think it is. In other words, it's something lowercase. But that stuff in the middle right there is interesting. Harvard's Lori Shaw, home team 17 points in the first 19 games without fans. And that stretch, that point total over that stretch happened less than 1% of the time in 19-game Bundesliga stretches since 2007-08, with the average being 31 points. And then the first 19 games of the season in the top five European leagues over the last 17 seasons, only once did home teams get 17 or fewer points. So yeah, it's something. It's
something
kind of, yeah, maybe not quite.
And it's soccer. You know, if the margins are so narrow in soccer, if, you know, a couple more home teams win instead of drawing, then this is, you know, just, that's just like a couple random kicks of the ball. And this is still something, but it maybe is a little less something. So yeah, we're not going too crazy, but it's something to keep an eye on for sure.
Okay. I think we've said the word something enough in the last,
it's something.
Yeah. All right. Leverkusen, was that surprising yesterday? Like that dud of a performance?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, we're getting some weird matches, I think, both because the restart teams are, you know, not at midseason form. And also it's like these are midweek games after teams played, you know, mostly Saturday and Sunday. So you've got short turnarounds. So yeah, that was the weird one of the day because Wolfsburg hadn't looked so good. Leverkusen had won in Gladbach over the weekend, which is a really good win. Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of just one of those, okay, you know, sports happen sometimes.
Yeah. Sports happen.
You shrug your shoulders and move on.
By the way, we won on Bayern. We lost on the total, went under, well under. Yep. But we won on a goal in the 43rd minute. What was the goaltender doing? Just got caught napping there? Was too far out? No man's land?
That was weird. It was one of those, I think, you expected a pass to go somewhere else. He was in position for something to happen, but it wasn't the right something. That was a little bit of a strange-looking goal. It was well done by Bayern as well. It was just, it looked very weird, like you said.
It did. All right. So you have a handful of picks here, so we better get to them. 5 games in Bundesliga today. You're not all over the place, but you've got different ways of approaching this. Yeah.
So I'm locking in on the RB Leipzig Hertha Berlin game. So this is a little weird since we're talking about how home field is reduced and whatever, and I'm going to jump on a home team here. But this is because simply kind of like yesterday, Leipzig's a lot better than Hertha Berlin. So we're not overthinking this in some ways. So first off, I'm going to take RB Leipzig to win this minus a goal and a half. So cover the minus goal and a half against Hertha Berlin at minus 115. So it's a little weird. You look at the last couple games. So Leipzig drew its first game back, although they dominated the game, had like 2.5 expected goals to like 0.7 or something like that. But still, it was a 1-1 draw, even though they outshot them like 22-8. And then Leipzig crushed Mainz, I think, last week, 5-0. Hertha Berlin has won 2 games by a combined 7-0. But that's a little fluky if you look at the underlying numbers. So I'm going with Leipzig here. They've outshot their opponents 42-10 in two games. And this is the best note that I found here. So Leipzig against bottom 10 teams this season. So you're kind of taking out the top eight, you know, roughly the good teams. Hertha's in 11th place. So against the bottom 10 teams this season, Leipzig has 13 wins and one loss. So they crush these teams that are in the bottom half. And 10 of those wins are by two plus goals. So it's not like they're eking them out. 10 of 14 games, they've won by two plus and outscored 48-11 overall. So I like Leipzig minus a goal and a half here against Hertha Berlin today.
Yeah. So I misspoke. I said you're all over the place when in fact you just had many bullet points, but focused in on the same game right there. Yep. So Leipzig in two different ways. And I don't know if you heard this. We're talking to Paul Carr, by the way, at Paul Carr on Twitter, C-A-R-R from True Media Networks. The Premier League, they tweeted it out this morning. Premier League shareholders today voting unanimously to resume contact training, marking another step towards restarting the Premier League season when safe to do so. We spoke about this a little bit yesterday. Your excitement level?
Hey,
the needle is pinned.
Yeah, it's inching up there a little bit. So we're in phase two. I think they're targeting June, was it 19th and 26th? They're kind of the two dates they have in mind. They've been saying they want to get started on like a Friday night there and then have a full weekend. So those are kind of the two dates. And then I think they're meeting today to kind of take that next step of maybe nailing down some scheduling or at least make it a little more firm, working on TV situations, things like that. So, yeah, it'd be great. You know, we get everything up and running again. Have even more fun, but it is kind of fun just to have like this one league that we can kind of lock in on and pay a little attention to. It's also fun when everything's going on and you can, you know, pick and choose here and there.
You were 3-0. You're like, this is great. This is great forever.
Much better. Bundesliga.
Last thing here. I know you're a huge baseball fan. We've talked about it. You're a Kansas City Royals guy. I'm going to talk about baseball a little more in depth later. But this is a strike at this point, isn't it? Like, we'll forget about resuming the season. That seems like the talk for next week, if at earliest. This looks like nobody wants to play. Like, the owners had to know the players would not be having this latest deal.
Yeah. Yeah, there seems so far apart. And I kind of get it on both sides. You know, the owners don't want to do this kind of halfway and not make money. And the players obviously have contracts. They want their money and all that. So I kind of see it both ways, but they've got a lot of work to do because as firm as they are on each side, I don't think either side wants to go a whole season with nothing. I mean, baseball is losing ground, generally speaking, already to, you know, football, basketball and such, and you're going to just cede a whole season and lose even more. I'd be a little surprised, but yeah, they've got a lot of work to do, at least publicly.
No, that's a great point, too. Baseball not exactly capturing the hearts and minds of youngsters in this country. Understatement of the world.
Yeah. Well, and you remember, I mean, how much they lost after the 94 strike. You know, it took, you know, 4 or 5 years and the Maguire says home run chase and all that stuff to really kind of get back to where they were. And this wouldn't be the same thing. But I don't know. Actually, maybe it would, because ultimately cancel it and it's, you know, greed on one or both sides is the reason. That's really not much different than the strike was in 94.
I think we all know at least one person who still doesn't watch baseball since 1994, right? There's that one person in your life who's like, I'm still not watching that after what they did. Yeah. Well, they might be parting like it's 1994 pretty soon if they don't get their act together. Paul, we appreciate it. Leipzig is the way to go. We will do so.
Leipzig minus a goal and a half. Leipzig first half minus half a goal. Let's go.
There it is, right there on the screen at Beeson. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Todd Wright on the way. Talk a little golf and hockey with us. And who knows what else? Chris Felica with horses, too. Still to come. On A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.